happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope that you're happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. You're listening to WGN Radio, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. And joining me in studio is legal analyst for CNN and former federal prosecutor, Renata Mariotti. Hey, Renata. Was it a busy day for you? Anything going on that there's a talk about, legally speaking, nationally, that people might be interested in?
Wow. One or two things. I tell you, it's amazing when the president's lawyer slash fixer gets sentenced to 3 years in prison, and people are like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we expect nowadays, right?
It's not even a big deal. And there are a lot of folks who follow you on Twitter and listen to your podcast On Topic who have so many questions that I thought we would kind of try to get to some of those, as well as our listeners here who might be interested in the nuts and bolts. Now, a lot of people want to know is, you know, are we getting closer to the president being indicted or finding out the president? I mean, one person asked on your Twitter feed that if somebody commits a crime at this level but is told to do it, isn't the person who told them to do it also somebody you should prosecute or should go to jail for something like this?
Wow, that's a great question. And the short answer is directing someone to commit a crime is pretty much always a crime itself. So in other words, if you have some authority over somebody, if you're like the boss at work and you tell people to commit crimes and they obey your orders, then you are typically responsible for the underlying crime. So that's generally the case. And so that is why this is such a big deal. The fact that that the prosecutors and today the judge, seem to conclude that the president directed Michael Cohen to commit these crimes. One thing I will say is that, particularly when it comes to, you know, complicated white collar crimes like this, that there is an issue of your mental state when you do this. In other words, for example, if I was telling my employees to gather and transport heroin for me, Everyone kind of knows that doing that is a crime.
Okay.
It's a little bit more complicated when let's say I work at a business and we're doing ordinary businessy things, and there's an aspect of it that's fraudulent.
Okay.
And I tell my employees to do stuff. The question is, did I have the intent to defraud, or was I just careless or whatever, and the fraud was happening because my underlings were conceiving of it and not me? So here, where we're dealing with a campaign finance violation, what I would expect if President Trump had good lawyers, what I think they would be arguing is, look, you know, Michael Cohen clearly knew that this was unlawful, but President Trump, he just assumed it was all okay because his lawyer was involved. And, you know, there's a lot of problems with that because Michael Cohen, at least as the prosecutors have told it, was not acting as a lawyer here. He was kind of acting in a separate capacity. And just so everyone knows, just because you're a lawyer doesn't mean everything you do is lawyery. Now that I'm talking here on this WGN radio show, that doesn't mean that I am giving you legal advice. I'm not. Not your lawyer. Essentially, the argument is, well, since a lawyer was involved, I would assume this was legal. I mean, that could be one way that he could defend himself.
The way he interpreted it.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, you have to prove, prosecutors have to prove each person's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's a little bit complicated, and I want to make sure we show both sides of that here. But I guess the point is, it's certainly very problematic.
One of the questions that came up from Twitter was, is it still possible for Trump to pardon Cohen? And if so, does that explain Cohen's rhetoric after sentencing today, where he said, I'm not weak, or maybe I am weak, but it's because I didn't stop myself from covering up the president's dirty deeds?
Yeah, I took the rhetoric to be, you know, Cohen, I think, appeared to me to be upset about some of the things that President Trump was saying about him. Trump was calling for the maximum sentence and calling him weak and he folded and this and that, which was odd. I got to tell you, I've never heard a public official speak in that manner. I mean, it was much more inconsistent with how criminals, who my former office here in Chicago used to prosecute, would talk. You know, you don't hear even people who are prosecuted for corruption in Illinois rarely are, you know, getting angry at, you know, this person's weak for you're talking to the feds or whatever. Everyone right. usually says, oh, we're cooperating, right? When we see even nowadays that we see politicians who are being investigated now, they all say they're cooperating and this and that. But in any event, I took that to be Cohen being angry. But certainly, I think, yes, Trump could pardon Cohen. Now, the pardon power under the Constitution is very sweeping. Now, one thing that people ask me from time to time is, well, can you pardon your own co-conspirators? Or what if
right,
the pardon...
Right, that's a great question. Right. You would think, hello.
Is there fascinating questions. Can you pardon your co-conspirator? What if you're pardoning someone to undermine an investigation? And yada, yada. These are all really interesting questions. And all I will say is they're totally unprecedented. They have not come up before. The Supreme Court's never considered this stuff because, to my knowledge, it's never happened. Mm-hmm. So I can speculate as to what the Supreme Court might do. But the long and short of it is we don't really know. But the pardon power under the Constitution is very broad.
You know, when Donald Trump was elected, when he won the presidency, a lot of people said to comics, oh, it's going to be great for you. You're going to have so much material. And comics were like, we don't need this much material. But I will say it seems as though it gives lawyers a lot to talk about, more than comics even.
Oh, my really? God. I will tell you, you know, I was always somebody who, you know, ever since I came back to private practice, you know, there have been times where journalists have called me up and asked me, you know, okay, Caterpillar got raided today. What's your take or whatever?
Sure.
And this would be... This would right, be, right. you know, the bot. I don't know. You know, this is on page 18, you know, somewhere buried. No one really cares unless you work at Caterpillar, I imagine. Now suddenly actually people care about my opinions about things. And I guess it's because federal criminal prosecutions and investigations, which now I spend my time on the other side defending folks who are under investigation and companies that are under investigation. You know, that's suddenly very interesting to everyone, and it's crazy. I will say I've never would have thought that all the years I spent, you know, investigating complex white-collar crime would suddenly become highly relevant to the presidency. I never would have guessed.
Oh, and there you have it. It is relevant, and a lot of people want to know. You can follow Renato on Twitter. It's at Renato Mariotti, and you can catch him quite often, pretty much every day lately on CNN. But right now he's on WGN Radio. We'll take your calls and texts if you want to join us, 312-981-7200. And we'd love to hear from you, 312-981-7200. More in a moment on WGN Radio. I don't know. Is Donald Trump fighting the law, and will he win? We are sitting down with CNN analyst and former federal prosecutor Renato Mariotti. You're listening to WGN Radio, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. A little bit of news today. Michael Cohen was sentenced to how many months?
36 months, 3 years.
Okay, 3 years. And then there was other news aside from that one. Something about Michael Flynn. Someone asked for leniency or no time, or what's happening?
So with Michael Flynn, he's the former national security advisor to the president. Mm-hmm. Mueller recommended that he receive a sentence of 0 months, which is a pretty good deal.
So the recommendation from Mueller was 0 months.
Correct. That's a great deal. Okay, whenever the prosecutor yeah. recommends 0 months, you know, the best thing to do is sit down. I'd say at that point, you don't see anything, say very little other than how much you agree. But there was some interesting stuff in the pushback from Michael Flynn's attorney. You know, he filed his own view as to what the sentence should be, obviously also 0 months. But sure. instead of stopping there, he kind of inserted some language that didn't say, because it would be false to say this, but kind of subtly trying to suggest that, you know, Flynn was tricked or got a raw deal when he was interviewed by the FBI. You know, his crime is that he was convicted of was lying to the FBI, which, you know, is a serious matter. And somebody who is the national security advisor to the president should know that you should tell the truth to the FBI.
Sure.
I would think. But, you know, but nonetheless, he was complaining essentially that the FBI didn't interview him with an attorney present, didn't tell him he should have an attorney present.
He felt duped, is what he basically said?
Essentially. I mean, yeah. They didn't come out and say it.
Okay.
Because if the attorney, knows better, you know, the FBI, just so, you know, listeners know, if the FBI wants to interview you, they generally don't tell you that you need a lawyer, you should have a lawyer. Unless you're in custody, they don't have to give you Miranda warnings. So typically, you know, typically what happens is, yeah, it's the truth, Patty. So the what happens is, I will tell you, I have people now come to me all the time, like the FBI came to my office and I wanted to answer their questions because I wanted to know what they were interested in or why they were talking to me or what they were looking at. So they answer their questions to find out what's going on. And of course, they potentially can times implicate themselves.
Yeah.
In this case, Michael Flynn, obviously, is the National Security Advisor. At the time, it does not appear to me that this was a criminal investigation. It was probably what's called a counterintelligence investigation. In other words, the point here wasn't to try to investigate anyone for criminal activity. The point was to find out what the Russians were doing, why they were talking to, you know, Michael Flynn and others. Mm-hmm. And so they talked to him on that basis. And Flynn, I think, was not guarded or worried about what he was saying from a legal perspective. And he made false statements about and lied about why he was talking to the Russian ambassador. And what he told the Russian ambassador was, you don't have to worry when Trump's president. You won't have to worry about these sanctions that Obama's putting in to punish you for interfering in the election. And, you know, the question, I think one question is, why did he lie? And, you know, we still don't know that.
Right. Well, and okay, so let me get this straight. And this is also from some of your followers on Twitter. Mueller recommended 0 months for Flynn. Did he recommend, how many months did he recommend for Cohen?
So Mueller didn't have a recommendation about that. Mueller was not the one prosecuting Cohen.
Well, that's right.
What happened was technically he was. What happened was Cohen had the hammer brought down to him by federal prosecutors in New York. And then he was facing charges on a whole bunch of things. And then at the last minute, Michael Flynn pled guilty to lying to Congress and had like a special deal with Mueller. And Mueller had an attorney come up and talk to the court about that. And I think the reason that Cohen did all of that with Mueller was just to have Mueller's attorney there, because the dynamic at the courtroom was a little weird. The folks, the prosecutor from New York, the federal prosecutor, by the way, just like I was here in Chicago, a federal employee, but, you know, focused on in an office focused in Manhattan, was not, those prosecutors in New York weren't so happy with Michael Cohen because they felt like he wasn't doing enough to cooperate, wasn't as forthcoming on other subjects. They thought he was truthful as to what he said, but that there was, you know, he wasn't willing to cooperate against everybody. And then on the flip side, the Mueller team was pretty happy with Cohen because he gave them everything they wanted to know about Russia or the president or whatever. And so it was an interesting dynamic. So I think that what happened was the Mueller team was there essentially, partly at the request of Cohen's lawyer, as part of that deal, so that this way they could tell the judge, you know, all the cooperation that Cohen had done.
Well, in addition to the news about Cohen, about Flynn, we also had news about Bettina. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there. Who's this Russian woman who seemed to have infiltrated the NRA, the GOP? She was in the audience when the president called on her for a question. It's all very strange and very James Bondy.
Yeah, it was very James Bondy. You know, a lot of folks are fan. I watched that series, The Americans. That's on cable.
Me too.
Okay, that's exciting, and it's very, you know, they're doing all these cloak and dagger things. These Russian spies living amongst us, or whatever. Maria Butina was kind of like that. I mean, she, I think, identified herself as a Russian, but you know, she was around all sorts of people. If you look on the internet, you're going to see photos of her with Donald Trump Jr., with Rick Santorum, Sheriff Clark, that guy with the cowboy hat from Milwaukee, the head of the NRA. She seemed to have a lot of dealings with the NRA and the National Prayer Breakfast and so on. And she founded a group called the Right, I think it was called the Right to Bear Arms, which is weird because that's from the U.S. Constitution, not at all part of the Russian Constitution or the Russian system of laws. But in any event, she managed to infiltrate a lot of Republican circles, and she had a romantic relationship with a Republican operative, and was alleged by prosecutors to be trading sort of romantic, you know, favors and relationships and so forth in exchange for working for the Russians. What we learned this week, I think yesterday, was that she is going to be pleading guilty to secretly being a Russian agent while she's in the United States, the sort of cloak and dagger stuff that I think people think of when they think of what spies do. And she's also agreed to cooperate with the government in all federal and state criminal investigations. And apparently her former lover, paramour, whatever you want to call him, who's an American, a Republican, kind of a longtime Republican operative, he has gotten a target letter from federal prosecutors, meaning that they intend to charge him, indict him, presumably for the same thing she's pleading guilty to, which is she's pleading guilty to, according to ABC News, conspiring with him to secretly be a Russian agent. So, you know, if he did that, that's what I think most people think of when they say treason, right?
I think so. It's not categorized that way.
Well, the Constitution defines treason very narrowly because of various reasons relating to our founding, but you know, this is, I think, what most people think. If you're an American and you want to make love to your Russian girlfriend so much that you're willing to sell out the United States and work for the Russian government, you know, that's a bad news.
Yeah.
My guess is he's going to get more than 36 months for that. That would just be my prediction.
All right. Well, we want to hear more from you. When can people catch you on CNN next?
So I'm supposed to be on Chris Cuomo's show tomorrow. I think that is at 8 p.m. Central. And I am on, you know, frequently all the time. You can also, as Patty mentioned, you can follow me on Twitter. My name is very hard to spell, RENATOMARIOTTI. And then I have a podcast called On Topic with Renato Mariotti.
Excellent. Have a great night. Get some rest. I know you've been very, very busy. In addition to being an analyst and answering everyone's questions, you also have a job. So get some sleep. Well, thank you so much, Renato.
Thanks, Patty.
Great to hang out with you. More in a moment. You listen to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna kill my... You know, some kids dream of growing up to be a doctor, and some kids dream of growing up to be a comedian. Dr. Bill Miller has done both, and spectacularly well. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and coming up this weekend, Dr. Bill Miller is performing at the Kenosha Comedy Club. That's Friday and Saturday at 7 and 9 at the Wyndham Hotel. You can go to haptoit.com, but he's in studio with me right now. Hey, Doc.
Hey, Patty. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, and partly because of great human beings like you and a few of my friends. When my son was in the hospital, he was recovering for over a month from surgery, spinal fusion surgery, and there was you know, people always want, they'll offer to help. Let me know if I can do anything, right? If there's anything I can do. And people who are, you know, maybe suffering silently or not really even knowing what to ask for, you know, we always say, like, we're fine, I don't need anything. And I did post pictures of how my life was kind of falling apart at home, and I showed my laundry, and you said, hey, pick a service and I will send you a company. And it was I picked Rinse, and it is one of the, there's, you don't know luxury until someone folds your panties.
Yeah.
What to tell you, but it was one of the, but so what you do is you bag everything up, someone comes to your front porch or your front door, and they take it away and they bring it back. And it feels more luxurious than it's ever felt since you bought it, even.
Yeah.
The way they washed it, everything was wonderfully folded, and it made such a big difference in those few months, because it lasted, like, what you put down for me, like, lasted. I still have like one more to go, I think. Well, so thank you from the bottom of my heart.
I have no, this disclaimer, I have no interest in Rinse at all.
Well, you just said any laundry service, but, and that was yes.
But when I saw what you posted, I haven't.
No one should live like that.
No, because yes. this lady, if y'all out there, you know what big a heart she has. She was up day and night with her little boy after the surgery, and I know what kind of extensive surgery that could be. And she goes, I haven't done anything. I haven't done my laundry in weeks. And I thought, you know, I'm busy too. I'm not going to go over there and do it. But I said,
no. People offered, and I was like, no, you can't do that.
So I said, I want to do something for you, Patty. So I did that, and I'm so glad I could do something.
It's one of the best things. Anyway, something. Between that and a cake and some food that Esmeralda Leon made for me, and of course, all the well wishes made all the difference in getting through that 6 weeks of recovery and everything. Yeah.
You got to know you're loved.
Oh, it's
you
very
gotta
sweet.
Know you're
thank
loved
you. Thank
by
you, thank
a lot
you.
Of people.
Well, and you see a lot of patients and their family members, and I mean, what a great ability to have the career that you've had, and both careers. Yeah. You started doing stand-up comedy, like you performed in L.A. doing the Comedy Store and the Improv and everything. How did this happen? How did you set out to do both things? Was it always sort of paired together?
You know, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to be, you know, I used to watch the Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah, I'm old, okay? I'm old.
It's okay.
As a matter of fact.
You're not.
I'm to the age now where when I leave the house, I want to wear bright clothes because I want to be seen from the helicopter. Should something happen to me, I faint, I die, something, they're going to look down and they can spot me.
Okay.
Call the kids, come get the body.
So, I'll get you a neon vest you can wear, sure.
Yeah, I'll do that. So I used to watch all the comedians on television. I sort of had a desire to do that, and I was always the class clown. I'd crack wise and,
sure.
You know, not pratfalls, but I'd always have that cerebral approach. And my dad kind of talked me into being a doctor. He said, yeah, I'd be a doctor. Doctors are steady. So, you know, all right. So I got into medical school, and my first summer vacation, my first Christmas vacation, there was an open mic at the Comedy Store.
Uh-huh.
I've always wanted to do that, so I did it. I got laughs, and then I was hooked. So I didn't want to quit anything, so I continued to do both. I did medicine, and I did comedy when I was going through medical school.
Oh, wow. Well, and I'm guessing in medical school, I mean, how much of it was about medical school? Were you trying to do more relationships or, you know, observations?
First, I was just doing more observations. And
okay.
Then after a while, Gallagher, as a matter of fact, saw me work at the Comedy Store. And then he says, you know, you're a medical student, and
yeah.
You don't talk about that? What's wrong with you? So since then...
Wow.
I got to thank him. I don't even know if he remembers me or not, but I got to thank him because since then I started talking about medicine,
uh-huh.
And that makes me a little different than everybody else.
Was there ever a moment in med school where you're like, that's it, I can't? Was there ever a breaking moment for you, whether it was the cadavers or the books, you know, all the different equations and all the...
Yeah, there was one moment, and there's a nurse that I'm still trying to find. Her name is Ginger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember her last name, but when I was a junior medical student, they asked me to do a procedure on someone, and I couldn't do it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't want to get graphic.
Sure.
But the band was, he had Guillain-Barré, and he was constipated.
Okay.
So you can use your own.
I got it.
And the intern says to me, go so-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. And I said, what do you mean? Yeah, just go do it. So I put a glove on.
Sure.
And I tried to do it, and I started gagging, and I almost puked.
Wow.
And I said, I can't do it.
And the patient's awake. They know that you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't feel from the waist down. That's why he's in that trouble.
Okay.
So, and I said, I can't do it. I said, and I took the glove off and I said, that's it. They can flunk. I'm out of here. I'm going to go do something else. And Ginger said, just go have a cup of coffee. I'll take care of it.
Oh.
And she did it for me.
She got you past that moment.
She did it.
I'm saying past that moment of wanting to, like, thinking you were done with medical school.
Yeah. She did.
Oh, wow.
And to this day, I owe her a bunch of gratitude.
Oh, and that's the thing. There are those people that you have moments with that you don't know at that second.
Yeah.
That's, you know, left or right, how your life changes.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's true.
That's incredible.
That's true.
You told me one time that you accidentally tried to start someone's heart that was already started. Was that right?
Yeah. You know, we used to party, you know, like everybody else in college and in grad school, when the occasion arises, you'd go out and have, you know, like the half price pitchers at Chino's East.
Okay.
And I came back
now
in, and they called the code blue, and I went in the wrong room and defibrillated someone who was sleeping.
Oh, God. Well, that woke them up.
He did. You know, I went, phew. He goes, what are you doing? I said, I got him back, man.
He saved him.
I was so happy.
Oh, man. Dr. Bill Miller saving people and making them laugh. Dr. Bill Miller is going to be at the Kenosha Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday. The shows are at 7 and 9. That's in the Wyndham in Kenosha. You can go to haptoit.com for information. You can also call 800-838-3006. By the way, that's also where I'm performing on New Year's Eve. So go there this week, check out the club, get your routes down for when you come out for my show too. So we come enjoy the comedy in Kenosha. It's a great place to hang out and have fun. More with our guest Dr. Bill Miller when we come back on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Dr. Mr. Bill Miller, just like one of our regulars, actually. Another regular on the show is comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. Has his kind of his one foot in the professional world, in this case, medicine, and one foot in the world of comedy. And that's what makes the show so great, because you bring so much. You have constant experience that no other comic has that I've ever heard of. Dr. Bill Miller joins me in studio. He's performing at the Kenosha Comedy Club this weekend, Friday and Saturday at the Wyndham. You can go to haptoit.com for ticket information. But really, I think that's one of the remarkable things, is nobody else brings the perspective to the stage the way you do.
Well, thank you very much. I try. I just try to relate my experiences,
yeah,
and my observations in my own, you know, off-kilter kind of way.
Sure.
You know, like, I think the biggest problem with healthcare and the people, the patients, is denial.
Oh.
Denial is a tremendous force in the human condition. Even an example, a patient came in, and his tongue, it must have had some kind of tumor, because it was sticking out of his mouth.
Right.
About 4 or 5 inches. It looked like a forearm.
No.
Yeah, it looked like a forearm coming out of his mouth. So I said to the guy in the emergency room, I said, "Why are you here?" And he goes, "My shoulder hurts."
No.
Yeah.
Come on.
I said,
he didn't even think there was a problem?
No, I said, "Does your tongue bother you?" He goes, "No, I could still eat."
Oh, no.
And I think that's a perfect example of how bad denial is.
Right. You know. Well, and there are people like that. Look, there are folks that worry about every little thing, and it turns out to be nothing. And then right. to think that someone could have something significant, and you're right. I'd imagine it happens all the time.
Right.
Where someone just thinks, it's not that big
blood
a deal.
Blood pressure. People come in with blood pressure that's 155 over 95.
Okay. Right?
That's serious. That's bad.
Okay.
They're not going to stroke out right now, but that's bad.
But how does someone sense that they have high blood pressure?
Well, you go to the doctor and you take the blood pressure. You know,
right.
Forever you go to Walgreens. It's a little up. I'm a little nervous. Nah, I'm okay. I don't need anything. I don't need anything.
I'm fine.
I yeah. don't need anything.
Do you find that more from older men than any other group that they say they're fine? Because I feel that that's guys just don't want to admit anything's wrong or ask for help.
I find
that
with everybody.
Everybody?
Everybody. No. Young people, old people. I don't want to take this medicine. It's a thing that's going to lower your cholesterol. No, I don't need it. I'll just change my diet. Okay.
Okay.
When's the last time you changed your diet? Anybody?
I did it once. I was told I had high cholesterol, and I bought a book, 10 ways, you know, 10 foods to eat. It was like almonds and oatmeal and all those things. And it did. It that helped me. But, you know, you get.
But eventually you added that medicine.
No, I haven't had the medicine yet. No, but I'm back on warning from my dad.
There you go.
I know.
There
stop. I know. I'm fine. I'm totally fine. You're right, though. I guess people don't want to admit that. It's the admitting it. Because there's also then the idea that they've done something wrong. Do you think that's sometimes the problem?
I don't think so. I mean, I always ask patients, how come you're not taking your medicine? I am taking my medicine. Dude, your blood pressure is 150 over 105.
Yeah.
You're not taking your medicine. Well, I'm sorry. How come you're not taking it? Well, it says don't take with alcohol. I said, Doc, that's a deal breaker.
Gosh, okay, this has come up because we have a pharmacist expert that comes on the show, and he said that's a thing. Is that like the number one question? Can I take this with alcohol?
Yeah, but you know, it's
Pill with alcohol?
You buy any kind of medicine, and what was the warning? There's like generic warning, you know.
Right.
You buy a ladder, it says don't stand in the wind, you know.
Right.
Don't go on that. So you buy some medication, pain medication, whatever the medication is, the drug company puts as disclaimer on the bottom, don't operate heavy machinery, don't do this, don't do that,
course.
Don't take with alcohol. And people read that and go, oh, don't take with alcohol. I can't take this.
That's true. I hadn't even thought of that.
It's true.
Right. If you
I don't need it anyway. What does he know?
Oh, man. Yeah, what do you do with folks like that?
Nothing.
Oh, man.
Document. You got to document on the chart.
You got to document
Otherwise,
everything.
Paul Farvar and his associates come sue us.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. There's so much in the world of medicine that's making it harder and harder to take care of people, whether it's, you know, filling out. Like, a lot of times, the doctors have to go through all this paperwork now that insurance has changed. How has that impacted you, having to kind of do things differently?
I don't worry about it. I mean, there's generic medication, which I try to prescribe all the time.
Uh-huh.
And then there's certain insurance plans only allow certain doctors to take care of the patients. And if I'm one of them, you know, I don't care. I just treat the patient and let the billing service worry about it.
Right.
You can't
wrap yourself up in that.
No, not at all.
Wow. And how about, like, are people self-diagnosing more than ever because of Google?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. You know, someone comes in, well, you have to have this procedure or this going on. Well, you know, I Googled it, and according to Wikipedia, you know, you have to do this and that and that. All right, thanks. Do you want to be awake for this? Do you want to watch? You want to let me know how to do it? I mean, so whatever you want to do.
I have to tell you a story about my mom. You know, I always have stories about my mom, who's incredible. She's been feeling tired lately, and I went downstairs to see her, and she looked really down. And I said, "What's wrong, mommy?" She goes, "I went to the doctor," and I got my heart like stopped, doc. She goes, "There's nothing wrong with me."
That's funny.
It's like, Mom, that's good news. I know, but why do I feel so terrible?
That's
like
funny.
I don't know, mommy. But she has in the past Googled her symptoms. I think I told you this one time. She goes, "Patricia, I wasn't feeling well last night, and I Googled my symptoms, and I said I might be having a stroke. But I thought, well, I can't call the ambulance. I have too many dishes to do tomorrow."
That's right.
Mommy, you have to take care. But you were right, though. That's another person that found an excuse.
Always.
That she wasn't feeling well, and she found a way around it.
Denial. It's denial. I'm telling you, the whole thing is denial.
It is. Well, here's a listener who's was not in denial and fortunately had a hand in saving his own life. We have a good friend of the show, Trucker Rich, who was diagnosed with stage 1 lung cancer and has survived and is in the clear now. He says, good evening, Patty. This is Trucker Rich. Great interview with your guests. I'm kind of proof that you should listen to your doctor every day, because every day is a blessing.
Oh, thank you. And I'm really glad you're better.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm the first doctor in my family.
Are you?
And I can't stand to get together with the family because they always ask me questions.
Sure.
And I don't know the answer to half the time. I mean, I got to be honest. They're asking questions. My sister goes, I got this thing on my neck. I don't know. Google it like everybody else.
Yeah.
My cousin says, Bill, my son, he walks on his toes. What does that mean? I say, it means he's short. That's what it means.
Right, because they've seen stories about other things. Yeah,
you know, they watch House or some other doctor program where they have these rare cases. You know, like 1 in 20 million people have this thing.
Right, and then, but they definitely have it because they saw it on TV.
Of course,
yeah,
of
that's
course.
Wild. Are they showing you like body parts? Hey, what's this look like to you? Can you imagine? I'm trying to have my mashed potatoes and gravy over here. You back off.
I draw the line. I said, if you can't put it in the sun, I don't want to see it.
I think that's a very good policy.
That's period.
If it's where the sun don't shine.
I don't want to see it. If you can't put it in the sun.
It's not appropriate for dinner time.
Right.
Dr. Bill Miller is going to be at the Kenosha Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday. The shows are at 7 and 9, and that's in the Wyndham. You can go to haptoit.com. Again, that's H-A-P, the number 2, IT.com, haptoit.com. The number there is 800-838-3006. One more time, that's 800-838-3006. And I'll be performing at the same place on New Year's Eve. And I'm so glad you came in tonight. I know we have the new studios and everything, so we've got to have you back on again soon. I'm not going to keep you on the hook until 1 a.m. I know that you got to get a lot of sleep.
It's my pleasure, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Doc. More after this. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We'll be right back. One of the longest running comedy showcases in Chicago has stages here and in LA and in New York. And we are thrilled to welcome comedian Marty DeRosa, who also has a #1 podcast on iTunes. Hey, Marty.
It was up there for a minute. Podcasts, like it's something with the algorithms or whatever. Like,
so it has had a #1
we've
podcast.
Had some success. Yeah, we've had some success. It's a roller coaster and it is what it is.
You don't have to negate something. Let someone put it in the universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Yeah.
Okay.
Super number one.
You just got off the stage at the Rosemont Zanies.
I did.
Isn't that the greatest club?
I had so much fun. And then you can go out and ice skate afterwards if you want to.
It is surreal now. I've never worked in a comedy club quite like that.
I wanted to pull like an Andy Kaufman thing where I'm like, all right, everybody, come on outside with me. We're all going to put ice skates on.
Well, I don't know if a lot of people even realize that reference, because there was a night when Andy Kaufman was performing.
Yes.
When he basically took everyone out for
milk and cookies.
Yeah.
They all got on a bus after Radio City. He did Radio City Music Hall, which was like his dream. And then he said, everybody, let's go, and got in a bus and then went to maybe a school and then they had milk and cookies, and he just kind of messed around with everybody.
I love that story.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
When you were young, was he one of your influences?
Yeah, because I love pro wrestling so much. Mm-hmm. And when I remember there was a documentary on Comedy Central years ago, and I remember watching this and remembering him I was too young to really, for the wrestling stuff he did, I was too young for that. But then I started buying old VHS cassettes. I mean, they were new at the time. VHS cassettes. Remember Suncoast Video?
I do.
So Suncoast Video had a pretty sweet wrestling section, and I would just buy anything wrestling. I have to have it. And there was one about like Memphis wrestling, and then I saw all this Andy Kaufman stuff. So I was like, whoa. And then I saw the documentary, and then just like everything blended together. And I'm like, this is all my favorite stuff. Like comedy, wrestling, everything, like unbelievable. And then you rent you read the books from the library and everything. You become like this little historian. That's like, when I got into something, it was like tunnel vision. It was like, this is what I'm into now.
Well, the world of wrestling, when I was a kid, it was really popular in the 80s. I had friends that loved it, knew all the wrestlers, yeah, and knew all their names and really got into the stories. And I would watch it and enjoy it and have fun, but I never got into it. And then I started watching GLOW, which I'm sure is it, do you enjoy GLOW?
It's amazing.
Okay, yeah, good.
It's amazing.
I wasn't sure and then I've gone back and watched the documentary which Netflix
Did
also
you cry?
Carries. It's great.
Dude, my girlfriend was watching it, and she's like, this is like a league of their own.
It is.
It's so amazing.
They were so excited to have this moment in their lives where they were all this camaraderie. They were living in this hotel in Vegas together and having these incredible lives that many of them never even dreamed of.
No. And they like had that. It's just one of those things. Like, it's like when you do like a nightmare show, you and those comics on the show are bonded forever with that nightmare show. And it's like 20 years from now, you could be like, you remember that nightmare show we did? And it's just like, you just can't, you know. And they, yeah, for GLOW, which the documentary is just like, it's so good. And I love, like, to me, that's like, that's how I learn. I watch documentaries. That's just my thing.
I think so too.
And every time I'm like at a having a conversation, like at a party or something, I'm like, God, I felt like the whole night I was just like, did you see that documentary? And I heard this in that documentary. And I'm just like I love them so much.
It's funny because I'm hesitant, right? I'm like some of the folks that I've talked to who don't like maybe black and white movies or movies from a certain period. And then they see one, they're like, oh yeah, but I like that one. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but I like that one. I'm kind of like that. I'm like, oh, I have to watch it. It's like learning. And then I watch it and I can't get out of the world out of my head.
Oh yeah,
I can't.
And that's what's so good now, is like you watch a great documentary and then it's like, well, now I have to go on the internet and Google it and find out everything about it. Mm-hmm. It's just like it's such a time to like be alive, or if you're into whatever, it's like, oh, I watched a documentary. Oh, there happens to be like podcasts about it. There happens to be, you know, articles written about it by like everybody who's like anybody, and you're just like, this is amazing. You just have like an excess of information, which is so nice.
I'm looking down at my phone because I'm trying to, I was trying to see how I could remember it, but I figured I'll just tell you and ask you. I'm sure you've seen it. Is that cult documentary on Netflix? That guy that was like,
oh yeah, yeah,
that was insane. That's why I'm trying to remember the name of it. Neither one of us is going to pull it out. No, I can't. What? Wild Country.
Yes. Thank God you looked that up, because right now somebody at home was like screaming at the radio.
Oh, I know. That's the worst thing.
I mean, there's so many of those where you just, when I don't know, like I'll try to like go in blind sometimes. If someone's like, you got to see this. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to watch the previews or anything like that. And you go in and sometimes you're just like I watch The Staircase and I'm like, what? Like, this is insane.
What is that one? Because I've seen it and I've seen it recommended to me because I like Wild Country.
Very similar. And it's like, I don't know if it's like 8 or 9 or 10 parts. A woman dies, and the husband claims his wife fell down the stairs. The police were like, no way, there's blood everywhere, this looks like a crime scene, you killed her. And then you go back and forth, and it's one of those where you're like, I believe him, nope, there's no way, nope, yeah, nope. And it's like you go back and forth. And that to me is where like the greatest one of all, there's a documentary. I feel like when Netflix first started streaming movies, it wasn't like 8 million things. They hadn't started making shows yet, and they had so many cool documentaries on there.
Sure.
And there was one, Marwin Call, which is, Welcome to Marwin is based on, such an awesome documentary. But there was one called Capturing the Freedmans, and it was insane. And when you're done, you're like, I don't know if they're guilty or not. And it's like, you talk to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, they're guilty for sure because this, and this. And you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then they're like, no, because of this, they're definitely guilty. And you're like, I don't know. And with The Staircase, At the end, like he, you know, I don't want to spoil or anything, okay. But they added a new thing. They're like, here's a new theory people have.
Oh, no.
And you watch it and you're like, what? But maybe, like, it's so crazy. Like, this isn't spoiling anything. Their new theory is that there are these owls that are in that area of the U.S., and they think this owl clawed this lady's head, and in her fighting off the owl, she fell down the stairs.
What?
Thus making it all bloody and all this stuff.
Well, wouldn't they be able to do, like, go back and see if there was, like, would they have to exhume her?
I mean,
and then match the, whether the claws
could
or
you
the,
imagine
the
if,
talons,
like,
I guess?
That's maybe? What I wonder about sometimes, where it's just like, what if that really happened?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's like, I swear I didn't kill my wife, an owl did. And everyone's like, yeah, right. But you're like, no, for real, I saw it. Like, he never claimed to have seen an owl. But, like, could you even imagine if they're just like, you're not going to believe this, but an owl came and just clawed my wife and she fell down the stairs and she's dead. And I know you're not going to believe me. Like, I should have took a video of it or something of this owl just, like, still in my house. But, like,
no.
Maybe it happened. I don't know.
Where did the theory even come from then? That just that there happened to be owls there?
Somebody was like... came up with that. An owl expert's like, yeah, we got these killer owls. You should probably look into that.
Well, there was a point where, do you remember there was a jogger that was attacked by an owl? Like, there were these random attacks.
These owls are vicious. There's a certain type of owl.
So
they have
cute.
They have these, like, talons. Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, it kind of makes sense.
Sure.
So, like, when you watch or when you bring it up on Netflix, there's, like, an extra little bonus episode of, like, you know, thing. And you're like, oh, yeah. But I would
extra
love.
Material.
Yeah. Like, I would love. I love closure, you know, like whenever a movie just ends, like, I forgot what movie we were watching and I'm like, this is going to just end like that. And it did. And I was like, oh, I'm so angry. Like, especially with a documentary where it's kind of like up in the air, like, well, we don't know. Like, I'm like, no. I need closure.
I need justice.
I
have to have justice.
I have to have justice.
I can't not have justice.
I have to have justice.
Yeah.
I've been watching so much live PD.
Oh, really?
Hooked on it.
Oh, boy.
And there's times where you're just like, oh, I need justice. And you get it sometimes. There was one of these guys who, like, clearly watches all those YouTube videos of, like, you don't have to tell the police anything. And this cop's just like, dude, I'm just trying to get your ID and your insurance. I'm not, like, and he goes, I know you've probably watched a bunch of YouTube videos. And the guy's like, I don't legally have to say anything to you right now. And then eventually the cop ran his license plates and he's like, dude, these aren't even for this car. Like, now I'm going to arrest you.
Right, if you'd just given me your driver's license, we wouldn't have this conversation.
He's like, this would have all been taken care of. And it's just like, and the guy was so, like, such an idiot to the cop that I was just like, oh, yeah, I need some justice here. And as soon as those handcuffs clicked on, I'm like, yeah.
Sweet, sweet
justice.
Sound of justice. We're hanging out with Marty DeRosa. He's performing at the Zanies in Rosemont. You can go to zanies.com for tickets and showtimes and find out more about Marty. Where do they find you on the social media?
Everything is at Marty DeRosa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And right here, right now, conversation with him when we come back. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. More just in a second. I don't know what's playing right now, but I know that my guest, Marty DeRosa, who's performing at the Zanies in Rosemont, got very excited. What am I listening to?
That is the theme song of One Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So, and that's a...
We should have had Nick's Day, because Nick's a big wrestling fan as well.
I remember being at WrestleMania 13 at the then Rosemont Horizon, and they had this big Austin 316 like glass thing, and then it shattered, and he came out, and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
If you ever wanted to incorporate that in comedy, you just like, what kind of big, like, flashing lights?
I just recorded an album that'll probably come out in like January, and I hired a pro wrestling ring announcer to introduce me.
How great is
that?
And
it was so worth it. I'm just like, I'm gonna pay this guy all the time to be around and just announce me. It felt so, like, so powerful. It was so great.
You do it, you know, live the dream.
You gotta treat yourself, right?
Well, for as long as they give us a stage, right?
Yeah.
You gotta make it yours in any way you can.
When I did that, I was like, oh, this feels right. He's wearing a tuxedo. I'm like, this feels right.
Aren't there those moments in your career you're like, this is, when I was pregnant, I did a show called Pregnant Party Girl from Stoli's to Stirrups. And I couldn't figure out how, like, if I had money and if I had a budget, I'd be like, you know, I would have like some sort of of like chaise lounge, like being pulled out like on a pulley. But instead, we were backstage. My husband, do you remember this? Rick Geezer's nodding his head. There was a industrial dolly backstage, and I just had my husband roll me out on the stage and dump me up out in front of the microphone.
I love it. It's like on a budget. Like, yeah, in a perfect world, if I had like, you know, Impractical Joker's money, I'm like, yeah, I'd be lowered from the ceiling and do all this crazy stuff. But, you know, on a budget, it's just like, oh, let's hire my buddy who's a pro wrestling ring announcer, and he'll bring me into the ring.
That's
so
brilliant.
It was very cool.
How was the crowd tonight at Zany's? Was it
awesome?
Yeah. And you're there tomorrow night, and we talked about how it's the entertainment district there now, which I grew up not far from Rosemont.
Oh, really?
There's this entertainment district in Rosemont. There's a casino in Des Plaines. There's all these things going on, but people still want to go and see live comedy, which, you know, from doing Comedians You Should Know, and of course all the showcases. But you also have this. You're working with Pat Tomasulo on Man of the People on WGN.
I am.
How's that been?
It's cool.
Are you doing a lot of the writing?
I help out with the writing. I do the warm up for the live crowd,
right?
Which is interesting.
Right? Why is it interesting?
You just gotta. It's like when people come to the show, it's like you got to remind them, like, oh, we're gonna have a lot of fun, and they're just like, oh, I'm just watching. You know, you got to like get them whipped up and stuff. And some crowds, just like comedy, like some crowds are just like so. Like when you walk into a room and there's a buzz in the air, you're just like, oh, this is gonna be such a great show. And then other times you're just like, oh man, I earned my money. Like,
oh yeah,
they needed to be like, we're gonna have fun. Yeah. I got this. Relax. So sometimes people come and they're just like so amped up and ready to have fun. And then other times they're just like, okay, here we go. Let's do this.
I'm the same way. I'll stand behind a curtain or wherever and listen. A lot of times at Zany's, Zany's is my home club, the Zany's on Wells. And I used to sit in the crowd just to see what everyone was doing and what it felt like, what they were talking about. And but last week, corporate shows can be really touchy, right?
I've got one looming. I'm like, oh,
do you?
Here we go. Yeah.
But they're better money. It's a good skill to have. And I did one last week, and I could tell it was such a big open room. It was like doing comedy in a hangar with like 400 people all sitting at banquet tables. And you bring it. You do it, whatever. You can't worry about whether or not you can tell how they're reacting, and after the show, I mean, I'm still getting emails from folks from Racine saying how much they enjoy. And that,
isn't that wild?
Oh, it feels so good.
And you just forget. You're just like, oh yeah, I'm kind of like a rock star up here, and you're enjoying this, so you're gonna be happy with me.
Sometimes, I mean, are there moments when you're on stage, you're like, okay, well, this is the night I'm having.
Yeah,
yeah.
It gets so like, I feel like comedy is this wonderful thing where it's like, whenever you start to get too like cocky or confident or like, this is really going great, comedy will be like, hey, you gotta come to the Wisconsin Dells and do a show for 7 people. Right. And you're like, ah, comedy, why'd you do that to me? Like, I had the show of my life. And then the next night, I'm in the Wisconsin, I'm like, they're not gonna hear this in the Wisconsin Dells. Or maybe they will. I'm in the Dells, and I'm just like, oh man, this hurts.
Yeah, no, you know? There have been so many, and I remember them. Do you take like mental pictures of those? Obviously, it sounds like
Don't forget bad ones.
No.
I don't forget. You know, more so, it's like you like watch a clip of yours online, and everyone's like, this is great, this is great. Then one person's like, sucks. I'm like, yeah, I will never forget you.
I'll never forget that. Well, my husband tells me that I should, you know, 100 people could tell us we're great, and that one person, it just burns.
Yeah.
It burns.
But the bad shows I remember.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, if I could go back to that bad show with this comedy brain I have now, like, let me add them. But I mean, I think you learn from the bad ones.
Right.
You learn from the bad ones.
The best advice I ever got that sticks with me, I was at the Zany's. There used to be a Zany's in Mount Prospect. And I was working with Mike Toomey, who also was with WGN TV.
Yeah.
And he's the best. And we used to have this high top table in the back. There was a kitchen. And he was telling me, he goes, you know, after 400 shows, you know when it's them and you know when it's you.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, after 400 more, it's always them.
Yeah.
And there are debates on that with comics. But there are nights when you just know it's not going to be yours.
There's sometimes where I just want to go, who do you want up here right now? And then go, in my price range. It has to be in my price range. Show me who you want up here right now, and then we'll talk.
We'll go from there.
Yeah, like they're just like Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld's not coming to this club,
right?
Or not for the price that they're giving me right now. So you tell me I want to see the comic come up here who can do this.
Who makes this happen for you?
Who will make it happen for you?
Yeah,
yeah. And it's like, you know, it's the same jokes I did the night before.
I know.
You know, and it's like, I don't understand, but I feel like and like you said, sitting watching, I'll watch and I'll be like, okay, they're not doing this. They're not, okay, okay. And then it's like, I feel like almost like an athlete, like put me in the game.
I refuse.
Yeah. Like I'm at that point now. I don't know. I'm sure you are there too, where you're just like, this will not happen to me. And like, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to change this. I'm going to change the whole vibe of this place. Cause I refuse to just go up there and like take my lumps too. And be like, oh, okay, you got me too. I guess they're just not, then nobody's going to get any laughs. Like, I'm just like, no. I will do whatever I have to do to get these people.
Yeah. No, and you find your own, like, your own toolkit, right? Mm-hmm. So my toolkit is there was a night, and to the idea of remembering the bad shows more, you've got to have, and I don't know any other way to put this as far as remembering the good shows, you got to have your good show spank bank.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start taking mental pictures of the ones that are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and I remember some of them, and it was a night, I can't remember who the MC was. It was a 3-show night at Zany's, and the first show was fine. You know, the 7 o'clock show can go either way. The 9 o'clock show was amazing. I mean, no matter, I could play. You know when you can play? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't matter what you say.
No, love you.
They just love you.
Yeah.
They're there. They want more. They want everything. And I felt great. But I remember closing my eyes and just going, remember this. Mm-hmm. Remember how good this feels. And the MC, all three of us had a great show. And the MC goes, oh my God, I can't wait. This is amazing. And they felt like so pumped up. I'm like, okay, hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
We got an 11:15 show coming. And they were just crushed. They were absolutely crushed with the drunks, with the people falling asleep.
Oh, yeah. And that's like where you just have to have your own fun and be like, okay. Or I'll just be like, the people who are invested in this and not too drunk to be out in public.
Right.
I'm going to focus on the people who are smiling and having a good time. And yeah, you learn all the fun tricks of like turning the good crowd against the bad crowd. And then we're in this together. But I think from doing stand up, and obviously like you doing this, it's like you can do anything if you do stand up. I just think like, you just have such a skill set that it's just like, what do I need to do? Oh, yeah, I can do that. And they're like, are you sure? And you're like, yeah, I can do that. Don't worry about it.
Oh, you can throw me in anything. I agree with you completely. Yeah, we got a big toolkit. We're hanging out with Marty DeRosa, who's performing at the Zany's in Rosemont. You can go to zanys.com for ticket information. He'll be there tomorrow night. I guess that's technically tonight, so it's Thursday night. And follow him on all the social media at Marty DeRosa.
You got it.
And find his podcast as well. More with him when we come back. It's WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Marty DeRosa is at the Zany's in Rosemont, and we're thrilled to have him in studio with us tonight. And the podcast, I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back, because one of the things that's changed in comedy, and I really think part of it was probably the maybe Richard Pryor, the authenticity of being a comic from like what people were used to on television and radio, what people or vaudeville and that transition to what was consumable, and then this like sort of brutal honesty, and obviously Lenny Bruce and Bill Hicks without holding back, and I think you've done a lot with not just in comedy but obviously podcasting and talking about things that are important to you, and I'm guessing a lot of people relate to.
I had a podcast called Wrestling with Depression that covered mental illness, and I talk about mental illness on stage, and it's so awesome where after the show someone's like, oh man, I feel the same way. I do bits about like thinking I'm my therapist favorite, or and someone's like, I think the same thing, or a therapist will come up to me and they'll go, I am a therapist and I do have favorites, and I knew it. So that's like the coolest thing. And again, it's just like, like you said, I get like the nicest emails where people are like, I thought I was the only one who thought this. And I have other comics, because as you know, you're going to meet a whole bunch of people who battle with mental illness doing comedy. Yeah. That's why I said, I'm like, I've never met more people with mental illness who are just making stuff happen.
Yeah.
And that's the podcast is about, making things happen in spite of mental illness, and sort of using it as your own, like, oh, you know what, this thing that is something I struggle with also helps me on the other end with creativity or tunnel vision or whatever. And when you have people who can articulate it, there's other people out there who are just like, I've never been able to put it into words, but that is exactly how I feel when I'm feeling these things.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's been awesome.
Let's talk more when we come back. We're going to go to the news right now. We're hanging out with Marty DeRosa, who's at the Zany's in Rosemont. Go to zanys.com for ticket information. And we're going to carry on in just a moment. I love the way Marty DeRosa is looking at me. He's performing at Zany's in Rosemont.
You know whose theme song that is, right? Take a wild guess.
Cold Steve Austin. I don't know.
John Cena.
Any idea.
So what's the fun thing is when you love wrestling and you'll do like a comedy club and people know that you like wrestling, when the sound person plays music and they'll play like a wrestling theme song and you're like, oh yeah, that feels powerful too.
Well, I'm getting the sense that Ben is one of the
The Cena song is one of the best walk-up songs in comedy.
It's
powerful. Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. All right.
It's up there with the Shields theme song, you know?
My theme song is Give Me Some Lovin' by the Blues Brothers. It's all I got going on.
Oh, man. Like when they're like, what song do you want to play? I'm just like, oh, I don't know what I'm feeling right now. And it's just like, because when I was a little kid, I would go to wrestling shows like at either like Rosemont or I grew up in Indiana, so I'd go to the Hammond Civic Center. And my favorite thing to do would be, I would like tell my dad, like, I gotta use the bathroom. And he'd be like, okay. And I would wait for the match to be over, and they would bring in the new wrestlers and they'd play their music, and I would walk down the aisle and pretend they're like booing or cheering at me. And it was like my favorite thing to do when I was a kid.
Ben, by the way, his head almost exploded behind you.
I've been there, done that.
Isn't it the best thing ever?
It's awesome.
It's so like
amazing.
As a little kid, I'm like, you don't boo me, and I'm just like walking down the hallway like or down the aisle like thinking I'm one of the wrestlers.
I'm gonna put Rick Geezer on the microphone too, because are you also into wrestling? Do you know all this?
I'm more into the wrestling songs. Songs performed by wrestlers.
Oh,
Marty
that's right.
And I were talking about that.
I was throwing some obscure ones at him. He's like, yes, heard it, got it.
What?
Yeah.
How many wrestlers have albums or songs?
I've got the Japanese pressings of many of them.
We both have the same Japanese pressing of a Terry Funk record.
I don't understand what's happening.
Right?
Now you have to find Terry Funk now, Ben. I don't know what this means.
Terry Funk, of course, the song. Which one would you want to hear?
What are some of the songs? The one about...
The one Barbara Streisand's nose?
That's one. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Is this something he wrote? Barbara Streisand? Yeah.
No, actually, Mouth of the South...
Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart wrote that.
Yeah.
My head, I can't.
I know. So there's
a whole
thing,
world I don't understand.
The thing in wrestling is all these wrestlers want to figure out ways to make money without hurting their bodies. So comedy, a lot of them will be like, oh, I'll do that comedy. I want to do that comedy with you. And I'm like, well, okay. Or singing, you know. I feel like in the 80s, it was like, if you didn't have an album out and you were some type of celebrity, like, what are you doing?
Oh, my God.
And WWF put out an album pretty much every season, every
Pile
year.
Driver.
Yeah.
Album.
Yeah, that's got a picture of Hulk in, like, steel worker
construction
clothes.
Hat. Yeah. Talk about stuff that doesn't hold up. Wow. It is so bad.
I could imagine. Do you find it? Ben, do we have anything to play? He's trying to find some of this stuff. Oh, what do you mean, kind of? Are you not sure about the lyrics? Is there any of this we should be worried about as far as content? I don't want to get in any trouble.
No, if you play Barbara Streisand's nose, it's fine.
Yes, Ben?
That's what I'm looking for right now.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Yeah, that's the thing is, why do people always think they can do comedy or sing?
Because I think it's just like, oh, I could do that.
Just but microphone.
I think they think it's like... what they do adjacent. It's like, that's wrestling adjacent. We get on the microphone. You get on a microphone.
Sure.
I can do that.
Right. They're eccentric.
They're larger than life. And I think it's that thing, too, where it's like, you know, when you see a celebrity think they can do comedy, and at first the crowd's like, wow, it's that celebrity. Then after like 5 minutes, they're like, man, you better have some jokes. I'm over the fact that you're a celebrity.
They'll eat you. Well, that's what happened to Kramer.
For sure.
Right? People always talk about, you got it? There you go. Let's see. I gotta hear this. Because anything called Barbara Streisand's nose. Mm. Ooh. Oh.
Not exactly Beat It.
A
but
little
pretty
bit.
Close.
Yeah.
It does sound like Beat It. Okay.
Changed enough to not get sued.
Okay.
I was listening to my radio late last night.
Oh.
And I heard a knock on my door. I went.
Ooh.
It was a girl about 5'4".
Okay.
She said she saw
it's talk singing.
It's which is another great way around not being able to sing.
Yeah. Give me a try.
I unlocked the door and invited her in. It was then I realized she had Barbara Streisand's nose.
Come on.
It's gold, baby, gold.
Do you think Terry Funk is at home right now in Amarillo, Texas, thinking, they're playing my song on the radio in Chicago?
Wait a minute, what's happening? Wow.
So this guy, legendary wrestler, but
sure.
In Japan, he's a god.
Okay.
And you can still buy this in stores in Japan.
That's
and you know
fantastic.
Who he is, because he acts, and he was in Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in a lot of movies. You'd recognize who Terry Funk is.
He was amazing in Roadhouse.
Amazing in Roadhouse.
Everybody's amazing in Roadhouse.
Wait, what's his name again?
Terry Funk.
F-U-N-K. By the way, what a great name.
I mean, just a great name.
That's a fantastic name. I feel like now that I've been watching Glow, I feel like I should just watch more rest. I'll go back and watch all this stuff. I like John Cena. He's been on what's that show that I love with Psych. He's been on Psych a couple times.
Oh, he's fantastic on Psych.
See?
I love that episode.
But to me the 80s stuff is just like so over the top and so ridiculous. It's just love it.
Now, this is not wrestling, so I don't know if I should put this out there as something that I fell in love with on YouTube Red. It was a series, Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I love the different direction of that, of like...
I'm so surprised.
The bad guy's the good guy now.
Right? It's Joey Lawrence. Well, you see like how he was bullied by his stepfather and all
that. It all makes sense.
And Ed Asner's a jerk.
Yeah.
Just telling him he's you know, rotted meat. You're like, oh, my God.
It's so cool to think, like, I love that thought that goes into of like, what made this bad guy bad? And then you watch and you're like, oh, like I heard they're doing like a Cruella DeVille.
Oh, really? The backstory?
Like, yeah, her, you know, what happened to her to make her bad.
See, this is the thing. And that's what a lot, I mean, I love the reimagining of things like that. Like I watched every episode of The Haunting of Hill House like in one night. I'm not sure if you like series, but I love haunted stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like, I think they were finding like with so much on Netflix, there's so much out there that people, they want that escapism. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and I don't know if it's distracting too much from other things.
Escape from what? Everything's so fun out there
right now in the world.
Who needs escapism?
Are you kidding me? Like the, you know, Time Magazine came out with their Person of the Year, which is journalists telling the truth and at the risk and at the cost of their lives, and I thought that was an incredible thing. And then there, you know, the list of the phrases of the year, like truthing, whatever the phrases were. But the thing that I'm wondering how many lists this will make it is calling the police on people of color.
Oh yeah,
because I saw this article, because we had honest to God, Marty, we did 3 hours on when you should and should not call the police, and people still seem to be confused about it.
As an avid Live PD watcher, and as somebody who, you know, I am on social media, and when you see, you know, like the one lady who thought the little black kid grabbed her butt and he just like walked by her and brushed by her and she's like, get the cops down here, and you're like, lady, and you know, you show them like, well, I don't know, and you see so much of that, and you know, you're just like, come on, we gotta do better than this.
Yeah.
But I think the awareness now is, you know, I give everybody a chance to change, and you know, I do honestly hope there are some people out there who see what's going on and they're like my dad is getting, as he gets older, way more liberal, which is great. I'm like, wow, this is refreshing. Like some of his views, I'm just like, oh, this wouldn't have been the same you 20 years ago. And I'm like, this is so great. And I think things have gotten so bad in certain ways that it's forced some people to be like, oh man, that's unacceptable. And in the past, they would have just been like, eh, not my problem.
Well, that's how I feel, is that what becomes unacceptable? By the way, a text from the 301 says that Barbara Streisand's nose is no Betty Davis's eyes.
Yes. Well, you see what he did there, right?
I see what he
there
did
were
there.
So many things in that song. I'm like, okay, the sounded like Beat It. Clearly, like, it was almost like the Monster Mash. Like Terry Funk was probably like, well, if I can do that, it's not a problem. I'll just do that. So
did I hear him about to say that she had Liberace's smile?
It drives him wild.
Yeah.
You know the lyrics to that.
And Terry Funk clearly met Liberace at WrestleMania 1. So, you know.
See, I am enjoying this. Yes, Ben?
Oh, I just love how you brought up, you know, how he talked.
Toxins?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, here I thought Drake was the originator on that.
Nah.
But no, it goes way back.
Oh, please. Jimmy Cagney in Yankee Doodle Dandy. That's all toxing. Okay. Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do or die. I mean, like the whole thing.
It's like William Shatner, how he used to do this. My girlfriend, I forgot what song I was playing. I'm like, Pulp, Ordinary People.
Oh, yeah.
And my girlfriend goes, what is this? I'm like, Pulp, Ordinary People. She goes, I thought William Shatner wrote that song. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, so happy that she didn't know. She had no idea. I'm like, you thought William Shatner wrote that song? She's like, yeah, now this makes so much more sense. Like, what was he talking about?
That's fantastic. And the other thing, like, what we love doing on the show, I don't know if Paul mentioned this to you when you were on, is that I don't know music. We actually have a segment called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical.
Yes, I'm aware of the segment.
Are you really?
Yeah. I guess everybody's pretty much like, you think everybody knows the stuff. Like, I get the wrestling thing. Not everybody's into wrestling, but there's certain stuff where I'm just like, how do you not know music?
I don't know.
I have a buddy. My buddy's the same way. He's just like, I don't never really listen to music. I'm like,
No, I listen to music and I love music.
Okay.
Okay. But I don't retain. Sometimes I'll know some of the lyrics and I always get them wrong, of course, you know. But Dunder Deeds and the Dunder Deed or whatever, you know, sure. I would say that for years. But I was in a booth last night with Paul. We were sitting at a restaurant. We were at the, and a song came on. He goes, oh, this is my favorite song ever. And he, like, you could tell that he was just having this moment. And I go, is this like, what is this, Peter Gabriel? It was, by the way, the song was Under Pressure. And I thought yeah. Paul was going to, like, he needed to rethink our entire friendship.
Yeah.
He couldn't handle it. I felt so badly. He was like, I can't.
I just don't know how people could just, like, casually be into music or just like, oh, yeah. Is this Peter Gabriel? I'd be like, oh, man.
Yeah, no, my husband, well, I told my husband, I go, yeah, I told Paul, I'm like, I think this is, what is this, Gabriel Byrne? And he goes, Gabriel Byrne's an actor. Yeah,
it's not even a musician.
He talks, sings.
Yeah.
He talks, sings. The Irish actor from Miller's Crossing. See, I can do movies. More after this okay. on 720 WGN.
Don't say Ice Ice Baby. Don't say Ice Ice Baby.
No, I know this one. I'll never be allowed to forget this because Paul Farvar was devastated that he knows I don't know music, but he thought for sure I would know this. And my husband, when I told him that I thought it was Peter Gabriel, he was like, how did you not know that this wasn't Queen and David Bowie?
I think you're going to say Gabriel Iglesias.
No, yeah. No. No fluffy here. All good. We were hanging out with Marty DeRosa, who is headlining at Zany's in Rosemont. You can go to zanys.com for ticket information. And the show time is at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. And you can go ice skating with Marty afterwards.
You bet.
Maybe go to the Five Roses.
The Sugar Factory.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Candy store.
That place is there, too. Rick Geezer also joins us in studio, and we've been talking about music and documentaries. And a listener texted in from the 815, Evil Genius on Netflix sucks you in. It's about the who killed the pizza guy with a neck bomb collar in Pennsylvania.
Yes. I remember watching the America's Most Wanted episode about this mm-hmm. and being like, what? I was blown away by it. I'm like, how is this? What is this? And then they did a movie, a comedy about it.
A comedy?
Seth Rogen, Aziz Ansari, I think.
But didn't the guy get his head blown? I mean, like, he died.
They did a comedy called 30 Minutes or Less. And I think at one point they go, oh, we didn't know. Or something. They like totally copped out. Like, we didn't know. But this documentary takes you through it. And it's one of those where you're just like, what? I could not wait to get to the end. Because again, I needed closure.
Yes.
And I got it.
You got closure? Did they catch the people?
Yeah.
Did you have justice?
Sure. I had justice.
Okay.
But it's another one of those where you're just like, wow, people are that evil and like, oh, this poor guy. And they put this bomb on. They put this bomb on him, locked him in it with lock.
First they kidnapped the guy? He was delivering
pizza? Well, I don't want to spoil too much.
Okay.
But what you can go into it knowing is this guy was delivering pizza. I mean, now when I see that Domino's pizza tracker, not the pizza tracker, the Domino's where they're like, we'll deliver it anywhere. And I think I tweeted at them like, hey, just watched Evil Genius. This is a terrible idea. You do not want me to be like Domino's because they call the pizza place and they're like, hey, we're like down the road. Mm-hmm. And it was like an abandoned place and the guy went there. They put a bomb on him and forced him to rob a bank with this weird gun cane contraption they made. So clearly these people know what they're doing,
okay.
building stuff. So he robs the bank with this thing on it. He's like shirts over it and he gives him a thing like, I have a bomb. And then shortly afterwards, the cops are like right on him and they've got him. And he's like, I don't want to be doing this, but I have to. And then the bomb goes off and he dies.
Oh, my God.
So that was on America's Most Wanted. And they're just like, we don't know what's going on. Like, you clearly, if you know somebody who could do this, like, please let us know.
If you know somebody.
You don't hear anything about it for maybe like almost like 15 years or something. And then this documentary comes out and kind of like, yeah, like rips the lid off of it. And you're just
crazy.
Like, wow, these are real people. That's where sometimes I'll get like, I'll watch those documentaries and I'm like, these are real people
this
that are
actually
like
happened.
Walking among us.
What are your plots?
Well, you know.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's that's a pretty good one of being like, I'm kidnapped. I saw another one on MSNBC. Remember when MSNBC, before all this Trump nonsense, on the weekends, they used to play all those great documentaries and like
a lot of prison stuff too. A
lot of prison.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, Dateline-y sort of like, you know, documentaries like that. And I saw one about this guy who kidnapped this girl and he was like a millionaire, but he was like one of those like cheap millionaires. Like you'd never know this guy's a millionaire because he never spends a dime. Kidnapped a girl locked her up in his basement, but did this move where he must have had a mask on or something, or she didn't know what he looked like. And then he went down there and he's like, I got kidnapped too. And he filmed these weird videos and he's like, we have to do this, otherwise they're going to kill my family. And she was like,
he was role playing kidnapping.
He tricked her into thinking, right, I'm the kidnapper. But then eventually he's like, I'm the kidnapper. And he would like take her out. And this girl, it was really weird. And finally, they were at a pool hall, and she just went up to a guy, and she's like, hey, that guy kidnapped me. And they're like, oh, okay, let's call the police. And as the guy was being interviewed, he was so crazy. He was like, I gave her a nice life. And he was like, I would buy her A1 steak sauce. Oh, this woman, God, would go through the most A1 steak. I'd buy the big bottle. And these guys were just like, you kidnapped her. And he's like, well, my wife was sick, and what am I going to do? I can't have sex with my wife. God. And they're just like, you are... And that's one of those, you watch that, and you're like, this is a real person.
No.
Insane.
They exist.
They exist.
You can't write that
way. No. And they like, when they finally busted him, he had, like, the Silence of the Lambs, like, giant basement. Like, it was crazy.
Well, that's... I mean, remember the guy in Cleveland who kidnapped three women? And you're how does that... And then I've seen other stories of men who, like you know, there was one where these women were, like, in a hole, and he put, like, a cover... just collecting people.
Yeah.
It's bizarre and terrifying, and they exist.
So now there's like somebody like, oh, I need a real psycho to make a documentary about. You know, they're
well,
just like,
and then that's the beginning of Kimmy Schmidt too.
Yeah, that's right. They're like pitching stories. Like, no, not crazy enough, not unbelievable enough.
I know. There's so much content out there. I mean, they have to keep generating this. But then when life is crazier, you may as well just document it and put it out there too.
It's one of those where you're like, you wouldn't believe I made a movie like that. You'd be like, it's not really that believable. But then it's like, oh, this is based on a true story, and you're like, whoa.
Well, that's like you said earlier, it's like every day seems unbelievable, and you go, oh no, yeah, there's a Russian infiltrating everything.
Well, that's like what's happening in the world, and then you watch Veep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, this isn't as crazy. Yeah, exactly.
I asked my dad, I go, was it like all this when Nixon, like before Nixon resigned? Remember? My dad goes, I wasn't really paying attention. I'm like, right on, Dad.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really remember. My dad was a hardcore Republican, and that's not true. He voted, the last Democrat he voted for when he was young was Adlai Stevenson from Illinois, and then he became a Republican. You know, hated Kennedy, loved Nixon, all thought that was all, you know, trumped up. Well, jump, whatever.
No pun.
No, I know. And then at the end of his life, six months before he died, he didn't want to vote for George W. He voted for Gore, and he said he just didn't like the idea of something that smacked of this monarchy. You know, it was one of those things where, like, it was interesting to watch him. But we know we would talk about what it was like when he was younger. I think for a lot of people, they do live in that, like, when I was younger, things were simpler, right? Because we even now, we know that now. I mean, with everything out there, you can't rein it back in.
No, I find myself like, talking about like, this is how it was. And I'm now getting to that point where like, I'm nostalgic for things. And I'm, 'cause I turned 41. Right. So now I'm like, oh, back then it was like this. And you're thinking like, oh man, this is what happens.
We
like,
had dial up internet.
Yeah, yeah. Right. The
we
struggle.
We had to wait for
that
photos.
Noise and stuff.
Yeah.
When people ring the doorbell, didn't your parents like answer the door? Like, we don't do that anymore.
I was telling my girlfriend, I'm like, what I used to do was I would call, like, if I wanted to talk to a girl, like in the middle of the night, I would dial the phone number that gave like the time and temperature, and it would just be on
a loop.
And then I would get the caller ID click, and then I would click over and it would be her. So she wouldn't ring the phone and wake up my parents.
Smart.
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. Problem solving.
Evil
way
genius.
Back. Evil
part,
genius.
Two.
I'm not going to order any pizzas from you. More after this. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We've been hanging out with Marty DeRosa, who's performing at the Zanies in Rosemont. Go to zanies.com for ticket information. And where do people find you everywhere else?
At Marty DeRosa on all the social media outlets. I feel like I'm not a comic. I'm more just like an ambassador for true crime documentaries.
I know. We freaked out the 301. These stories are horrifying. I'm so creeped out. So stay tuned then for Nick D. You'll have we didn't mean to leave it on that note. It just ended up that way. We spun the wheel of conversation and there we landed.
We went down like the rabbit hole like you would on YouTube watching.
That's right.
Weird videos.
Exactly. Rick Geezer, we'd love talking to you again. I know Rick's a regular on Nick D's show with sports.
Sports song. I'll be on next Thursday night.
Perfect. Next Thursday night. Yeah. Listen for Rick Geezer. Yeah. Everyone go to zanies.com. You got to go to ice skating with Marty tomorrow night after the show.
That's right. I promise not to talk about murder.
Well, if it comes up.
Anyone murdered with an ice skate?
Oh, boy.
Oh, maybe. Oh,